Where are you looking? I'm up here. Right up here.
Master!
Answer me, Domon! The school of the undefeated in the east!
The winds of the king!
And Australia! Drink us, drink us!
Look! The east is burning red!
Okay, ready? Let's start then.
Righto.
No, I don't know what to say now it's recording.
This is a Dreamcast disc and is for use only on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers.
Dreamcast, up to 6 billion players.
Welcome back to the stage of history.
Why don't we play together?
Hey, 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 it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.
Hello, and welcome to episode 30 of the DreamPod. Today we have a Sega Naomi special for you. Without further ado, let me introduce all the way from Australia, Tom Sharnock.
Hello. It's good to be here. No, this is
terrible. Oh my god, that was awful.
It is awful. He's always moaned and droned, and to be perfectly honest, I'm sure everyone's sick of hearing me talk about Dreamcast, so I'm just going to stop talking.
That was a bit Scottish almost, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's got a very distinctive voice, but it's inimitable. I can't do it. I've tried.
Okay. Now, I'll introduce the real Tom now for you. Here's Tom from all the way from a council estate in Manchester. Hello, guys. Yeah. No, I can't do it. Okay, guys, for you listeners, I'm sorry to put you through that. Tom is away today, and you're stuck with me, the one Ross, Ross O'Reilly, and Dr. Egg Fan, a.k.a. Scott Marley.
Hi, everyone. Looks like it's just the two of us this time.
It does. Mike was supposed to be coming, but I don't know, he's not shown up yet, so if he joins halfway through the recording, we'll just carry on from there.
Yep.
But let's get started. So, Scott, what have you been playing recently?
I've just finished off Leona's Tricky Adventures.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I played that pretty solidly until the end. And I'll probably save most of my comments for an article that Tom and I are putting together, sort of reviewing the game. But yeah, it ended kind of abruptly, and it sort of gave me the same feeling that Soul Reaver Legacy of Kain did, and felt like it was building up to something.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it was over, as if there was like more to the game coming, but it didn't actually happen. And I thought maybe it might have had multiple endings and there was a way to get like a better ending. But the research has shown that it's sort of all of the things that are hinted at that aren't actually in the game are proposed for a future sequel, which sort of left a bittersweet feel at the end.
Okay.
So it's a reflection of how much I enjoyed it that I wanted more, but then I didn't have more, so it was sort of a bit of a sad ending. But yeah.
Oh well, we'll have to wait another 5 or 6 years for the sequel, then, I guess.
yeah, hopefully. Yeah.
Was it worth the wait, though? I mean, in short, did you enjoy the experience?
I did. Yeah, I'll have to reflect on it because it really is fantastic, and the learning curve and the difficulty curve is really well constructed. It's very well polished. All of the puzzles sort of just get slightly harder as you move along, and I really enjoyed it. I just feel like there was some opportunities for it to go a little bit further and bring in some of the overworld elements a bit more, and I was kind of waiting for that to happen, and it never did happen. So if you just look at it in isolation as a puzzle game with, you know, 400 plus puzzles, it's great.
Wow, 400.
Yeah, it was 457 all up.
Wow.
It gives you the impression of like a Super Mario World or a Zelda or something, that you're sort of waiting for these additional elements, but then they never sort of come.
Hmm.
Not saying it's bad, but I was wanting more, which is probably a reflection of how much I enjoyed it, that I wanted more. Hmm. But yeah, so it was good.
And do they keep up with the, like, humor throughout? Like in the beginning, it's quite amusing, but I wonder, do they manage to sustain that through the whole game? Or
yeah, there was like 5 or 6 good humorous moments, but yeah, it's mainly just solving puzzles, moving to the next lot of puzzles, and perhaps it's unfair to judge it on what could have been than because what it is actually something that's really good. So
oh well, I think I personally would, I'd still place it in the upper tier of indie Dreamcast releases myself, but
yeah me too.
And how many hours did it clock in at roughly?
Oh, I don't know, it was a few weeks, you know, a couple of hours here and there. It didn't have a handy timer, like some games have a timer of how long you've spent on it. Couldn't say that. 10 hours, 12 hours maybe.
And anything else you've been playing recently?
So once I finished that, I moved on to Sturmwind as well, but I've only played a couple of levels of that. I haven't really played enough to form an impression of it yet, but the big selling card of it was these fantastic visuals, and I wasn't overly impressed so far, but like I said, I've only played a couple of levels, so it's probably unfair to judge it yet. So
yeah, I'm not a big fan of Sturmwind, to be honest. I mean, it does look, I mean, some people say it's one of the best looking games on Dreamcast, which is not true, not even close to true, but taken as an indie game, it's certainly up there with the best looking indie games, at least.
Yeah, definitely.
But my biggest problem with it was the collision detection. Many of you have probably played it, but for those who haven't, you have regular enemies and bullets and game objects, and then you have the background layer. And some of the things in the background you have to shoot, and some of the things in the background can hit you, but the collision detection isn't quite there. And there's, I'm specifically thinking about one moment that became really frustrating for me. There's a boss, I think, at the end of level 3, and it's like, what's the name of the Robocop?
Ed 209.
Ed 209, it kind of looks like that. But again, it's part of the background, like it's not an independent game object. And you have to like dodge fire by going down really close to his legs. And I kept finding that I kept dying when I wasn't actually anywhere near the robot's legs, and it just really like spoiled the experience for me, to be honest, and I got frustrated and I didn't bother playing it after then. So yeah, that's my experience. So.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, because it is like FMV, isn't it? It's like background layer is a video.
Exactly.
So there must be overlaying some sort of see-through object. But yeah, and I was interested to find out what kind of video compression they used, whether they used, you know, a freeware codec, or whether they did sneakily use the formal Dreamcast softdeck codec or not. But yeah, I don't know the answer to that one, but I was interested to know whether they got away with it.
That would be interesting to find out. Okay, well, me myself, I've been playing recently Path of Exile on PC. Do you know that game?
No.
It's kind of like a Diablo clone. I've been playing it with my girlfriend a lot. We live in the same apartment, but we've got 2 PCs and we play it online together. It's quite enjoyable. Other than that, I recently completed Crysis 3, and I've been playing Shadowrun Dragonfall. Have you heard of that?
I've heard of Shadowrun. Shadowrun's a fairly old compile game, isn't it?
Yeah, this is a sequel, or like a not a remake, more of a sequel. It was funded by Kickstarter, the original game, and they've released a few different add-ons or mods for it since then. And I'm thoroughly enjoying it. It's excellent. The writing's really good. The story's I hate this word, but the story's very mature. It's like very serious. There's funny moments as well, but it's very well written. Good character development and quite a complex story. Thoroughly enjoying it. On the console front, I've not really played much recently. As the weeks go by, this gen, I find myself turning more to my PC every week. I've said it before, I'm not really impressed at all with this gen's offerings, bar the Wii U, which is great, of course. But yeah.
I had a train of thought the other day with Tom's article about the Total Control magazine, and one of the Sega execs was aiming for 50% of the console market or something. And I thought, projecting forward, you know, this generation seems to be prematurely ending with threats of, you know, PS4 and a half and Xbox 1.1 and the Nintendo NX.
Yeah.
And it seems like there's a reluctance for people to upgrade and for it to sort of, it seems to be console gaming is sort of heading into a very dire situation that perhaps it will cease to exist and people will either play on PC or smart phones or smart tablets.
Well, yeah, with the exception of the Wii U, I'd say it already doesn't exist. I mean, to me, the Xbox One and PS4 aren't consoles as I know them. You know, you've got to install all the games. There's huge updates every time you turn the thing on. The games come on discs, but they don't in a way. I mean, you're not getting the full game on the disc, even a day one update. Like, even a game like Raiden 5 had a almost 5 gigabyte update on day one.
Wow.
I couldn't believe it. But so, to me, the appeal of owning these games physically is non-existent anymore. I don't want incomplete games on my shelf. I don't see the value in them. And other advantages of consoles, like local multiplayer games, there's hardly any of them with the exception of a few indies. Exclusive games made by the console manufacturers, there's very few of them these days. I mean, compared, the Dreamcast lifespan was about 2 years, 2.5 years, which is pretty much the point that these consoles are at now. And look at the Dreamcast library of, like, Sega-developed games. It's huge. And so many amazing, great titles. But what have we got on PS4 and Xbox One? There's, like, maybe 2 or 3, I wouldn't standout titles, but they're not anything amazing.
No.
I could live without them. And, yeah, for those reasons, that's why I'm moving towards PC recently, I think.
What are we up to now? Generation 8 or something? I didn't even really get into the last one, the PS3, 360, Wii. And so I was extrapolating forward, thinking by generation 10, there'll be no new consoles, but the Dreamcast will be still left standing. And we'll still be getting indie games on the Dreamcast. And that prediction of getting 50% of the console market, we'll have 100% of the console market with the last console standing in the future. So
yeah, let's make it happen.
Yeah, that's right. Leading into the Naomi discussion, I pretty much, after Dreamcast died, I didn't really continue in the console sphere, and I just moved into the arcade sphere and followed the Sega hardware that came out in that. So, yeah, I'm not even really that familiar with the pain of day one patches to fix problems and things. I kind of avoided all of that.
Well, you're smarter than me. It's taken me 10 years for my brain to finally catch on to the fact that consoles are dead. To be honest, even last generation, okay, that's when it really started for me. Started to become more PC-like, but it was still close enough to consoles for me that I enjoyed them. But this gen, they've just crossed the line for me, and I'm losing interest. But anyway, let's not put a downer on the whole podcast. Let's begin our coverage of Naomi. Okay.
So this ends episode 30 of the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod, and now begins episode 1 of the Naomi Junkyard Naomi Pod episode.
Yes.
1.
Yes. Let's get it on. Developed alongside the Dreamcast, the Sega Naomi was built as the successor to the Sega Model 3 arcade system, with the purpose of creating a unified platform between Sega's arcade and home console output. As such, it had almost identical specs to our beloved DC, the main difference being that it featured double the amount of RAM and VRAM. It was first unveiled at the Amusement Machine Show in Tokyo, shortly before its first release, House of the Dead 2, on the 20th of November 1998, a full week before the Dreamcast Japanese launch. This first game came built into the system enclosed in a hard steel case, much like the previous line of Sega modern arcade hardware. Future releases, however, came on giant white carts that could be easily swapped in and out of the system by arcade operators. Towards the end of the year 2000, a GD-ROM add-on was released, meaning most of the later releases came on the GD-ROM format, much like our favourite console of all time. The system was hugely popular worldwide and supported with a plethora of games until its final release, No Kone Puzzle Takoron, in the year 2007. meaning the system had official support for an incredible 9 years. Only beaten by the SNK Neo Geo MVS as the second longest officially supported piece of arcade hardware of all time. So, Scott, what's your experiences with the Naomi? How do you get into it? And what's your thoughts on the system?
I'll just add an amendment to you.
Oh, okay, go on. Correct me. Go on. Give it to me.
Yeah, I think Puzzle Tuckeron was the last GD-ROM disc released, but I think cartridges continued to be released until 2009.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think the last one was the sequel to Radiology, Radiology Naowa, or whatever it is, NOA, sometimes misinterpreted as Noir.
Well, there you go. Sorry, one more time. So, in the year 2009, meaning the system had an official support for an incredible 11 years, only beaten by the SNK Neo Geo MVS as the second longest officially supported piece of arcade hardware of all time. You happy now, Scott?
I'm happy now.
Okay. No, but thank you for correcting me. Yeah, we want to get our facts straight, so that's good.
Yeah. So you asked me how I got into it. And yes. It was around the very end of the Dreamcast lifespan in sort of 2007, 2008. With some of the very last shoot 'em ups being released, and I was anticipating. There was rumors that Triangle Service was going to be releasing Exile, the sequel to Trizeal, on Dreamcast for the 10th anniversary in 2008. And 2008 sort of came and went, and Exile never came out on Dreamcast.
It got a 360 release later on, though, eventually, didn't it?
Yeah, that's right. But I didn't buy a 360. I thought, I've run out of things to buy for Dreamcast. Why don't I buy a Naomi? And the motherboard was on eBay for like only $100, $120 or something. So I started there. It wasn't that expensive to pick that up. And then I did a lot of research online trying to figure out what else was required in order to turn it on, because it's not really like buying a console where everything is included inside and you just hit the on switch. It's like lots of different components need to go into making it. So I started collecting all the bits and pieces in order to make it work and putting it all together. And at the time, I was very much a beginner. Like, I'd never soldered anything before. I'd never pulled things apart and put wires together and things, and I just went for it and tried to make it work and see how far I could get, and it came together pretty easily. Like, it's I think a lot of people sort of don't get beyond that barrier and are worried about buying expensive things and breaking them, or soldering something and solder goes everywhere and you ruin it, and getting electrical shocks and things, and it's really not as hard as most people think. Even the Naomi I have today, I didn't have to solder anything.
Yeah, so briefly, what was your solution? What is your setup, very briefly? How did you get it all working?
So there's sort of two main options for setting up a Naomi. There's either using the official Sega input-output board or the Capcom input-output board.
Yeah.
The Capcom one is good if you've already got a setup for Jamma arcade hardware. Because it's or a super gun, because it can take the inputs as well as the power, and feeds that back to the Naomi motherboard, and that can be rather simple if you've already got some hardware in that sort of jammer space. But that also means that the Capcom input-output board generally is more expensive, because arcade collectors are more interested in that option. But because I was starting from scratch, I thought, well, I'll get the cheaper Naomi input-output board, and I threaded power via a spare Outrun 2 power supply. So a lot of the systems in this sort of era, sort of between Naomi and Lindbergh, use common components and common wire connections for power and things. So you can start any parts that are sort of compatible with any of those systems generally are cross-compatible. So I've got the Naomi motherboard, the power supply, the input-output board, which you wire up to your Sanwa joystick and your Sanwa buttons, and I just set those up inside a broken Dreamcast arcade stick. And at this point, I think that's enough to get started. If you've got those, you can run cartridges from your motherboard, so you can pull cartridges out and put cartridges in. And then the step beyond that is investing in a GD-ROM drive and the DIMM board that the GD-ROM drive connects to. And don't make the mistake that I did of buying the cheap DIMM board, because there's a version one that's cheaper. Go for the later version that has the LAN port on it.
Well, let's slow down a bit for our listeners who aren't so familiar. What is a DIMM board, Scott?
So instead of plugging in ROM cartridges from games released in a cartridge format, there's a cartridge called the DIMM board, which sits in the same slot and has a lot of spare. I suppose it's RAM. Is it RAM? Well, it's DIMM, D-I-M-M.
So. It's like similar to on any cartridge. You've got ROM, read-only memory. It's similar to that, except it's not read-only. As you know, at the beginning, it loads all the information onto those RAM or ROM boards on that cart, and then once that initial load's completed, the Naomi loads the game just like it would any other cartridge in the system.
Yeah.
From the like simulated ROM.
Yeah, it's essentially a blank cartridge or like a flash cart that you might have for
A rewritable cartridge, yeah.
So yeah, there's a couple of versions of those, and you should opt for the more expensive one with the LAN port, because that means you can load things directly from a PC via an Ethernet cable, or you can update the firmware so it's compatible with the compact flash solution that followed after the GD-ROM drive.
Have you got the NetDIMM up and running, like, through your PC?
I did it once just to update the firmware. So the last official firmware was version 4.01, and there's a cracked version 4.02. So if you update the BIOS of the DIMM board to the cracked version, then you can run the zero key security key and then run software via compact flash cards instead of GD-ROM disks. There's an official solution for that that's expensive, and there's also an unofficial solution that's a bit cheaper. So you can have games on both disk or compact flash, and compact flash has the advantage of loading a little bit faster. So,
all right.
I have heard, but I haven't actually done it myself. I have heard that there's now developments where you can just load directly from PC to the DIMM board via the Ethernet cable.
Some people use a Raspberry Pi, don't they? I've seen that as well.
You
could for a while buy kits, and they were like a kit with the IO board, the DIMM board, and a preloaded Raspberry Pi. So that'd be a great solution. I did want one, but I've forgotten the name of the... I think it was Jason's Arcade Parts or something or whatever. It's some guy who sells arcade hardware out of Hawaii, I believe. He was selling them, but by the time I decided to make the purchase, he was sold out. So,
yeah. Do you know if... I was wondering how that worked with the security key, because there's a... Each game comes with a unique security key.
Yes, they give you a... Sorry, I forgot to mention that. They give you a security key that they flashed themselves, and that'll let you play any game you want. So, yeah, there are ways to do it yourself, and you can set this all up yourself. You can even flash the key to yourself. I don't know how to, but probably flashing the key is the most difficult part. You need like specific hardware to do it, but you can on a few different, I can't remember which, but on a few different arcade forums, you can still order those keys.
Yeah, so that sort of developed after I kind of finished, because I've got it all set up on the previous solution using compact flash cards, and I've got quite a few original games as well. I sort of picked up, we'll talk about this later, but I picked up a lot of the games that never came out on Dreamcast, so the sort of that potentially could have come out on Dreamcast but never did. Most of my Naomi collection focused on those games that weren't ported.
Yeah, that was exactly the same as me. The way I got into it was a little bit different to you. I started much later. It was probably around 2 years ago, I think, when I was given a Sega New Astro City arcade cabinet, which is jammer only. It doesn't have VGA output for the Naomi or other JVS arcade systems. Yeah. So at first, I just played around with a few jammer games, but I had it in my mind. I'd always wanted the Naomi, so I watched a ton of videos and read a ton of information about what I needed, and I made the decision to go with the Capcom IO board because it just seemed easier. Doesn't it have it has a built-in audio amplifier as well, doesn't it, I think?
Oh, yeah.
And it also has support for the kick harness, so you can play the six-button like fighting games easier.
Yeah, it was one of the things I struggled with the Sega Naomi board was getting that sixth button working.
Yeah,
it was sort of separate pins located elsewhere from the jammer pin out.
Yeah, I'm sure there's ways of doing it, but you're far more technically minded than me. I just took the easy option, the easy route, and got that. And it also, I don't know if from what I've heard, the only way to play four-player games like Power Stone 2 or Power Smash 2. I think maybe that's it. I'm not sure. But if you want to add the extra controls, I believe the only way to do it is with the Capcom IO board. I'm not sure. Maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong.
I don't know for certain, but that sounds like it could be. That could be right, yeah.
I've never tried it myself, and I probably won't ever try it because the games are four player. I've got my Dreamcast anyway, and it's not worth the trouble. But I still like that it's there. In case ever in the future I want to do that. So, yeah, I got the IO board and hooked it up. And at first, like you, I just bought the exclusive games that are compatible with just regular six buttons and arcade sticks. We'll mention those later, but yeah, I got those. After I'd played through them, I wanted to move on a bit. I wanted to get the... I wanted to get a lot of the releases, but they were just too expensive and I couldn't... They take up a lot of space as well, and I couldn't justify it. So I went for the flashcard option like you did. I bought mine for a guy called Arcade Mod BIOS. If you Google, you can find him. It's not cheap, but it's not insanely priced either, and it's definitely been worth it. So after I got that, I sold all my old carts. I think I've just got one now, and that's Virtua Tennis, just for testing purposes. And yeah, that's exclusively how I play now, just through the flashcard reader. It makes it a lot easier. It's not quite as simple as plug and play. I mean, you have to take your flashcard, you have to go to your PC, load the game onto it, and then go back to the arcade cabinet and put the flashcard in. But it's a lot cheaper, and I've got every game I want as an option right there. So yeah, that's how I went about it.
Yeah, I'll probably have to grill you a bit about flashing your own cards, because when I did it, I bought it from a guy. It was Summit Arcade, which I don't think exists anymore. And he provided individual flashcards for each game. And I've never delved into creating my own flashcard.
Well,
it's probably not that hard. I've just never done it before.
Yeah. I have no idea how you do it by yourself. But when you buy from Arcade Mod BIOS, he gives you links to a download of a program he made that flashes the cards for you. So it's as simple as plugging them in, clicking flash, and then his program does the rest.
Yeah, I bought my I bought the Triforce flashcard system from him, but I haven't actually tested it out yet. So,
oh well, there you go. It's the same thing, I think.
I know I couldn't use my Naomi Combat Flash system on Triforce because Triforce had a special way of doing things that was a bit different. So it may not be cross compatible. I'll have to look into it. I wanted to ask, when you bought official games, who did you buy them from?
Yahoo Auctions every time.
Oh, okay, yeah. I had a good relationship with Fujita Communications. There's this lady that sells secondhand Japanese arcade games for across a lot of systems. And even if she doesn't have things listed on a site, she often goes out and hunts things for you if you're after something specific.
I've never heard of it. And what kind of prices were you getting stuff for?
Pretty decent. That's probably something we should talk about to warn people. So you need to understand arcade hardware collecting is the domain of you in the home as well as arcade operators. And arcade operators are quite happy to spend up to, $1,000 or over on a game because they know they're going to recoup their losses within a few weeks of people shoving in coins into the coin slot. Whereas when you're at home, you don't have that. I bought games roughly around the $300 range was my upper limit, and most games were sort of $100, $150. So it does get quite expensive when you're buying a lot of them. If you want the official cartridge or the official disc, then it's quite expensive.
Yeah, I think I'd recommend if you're a player more than a collector and you don't have a huge amount of money to spend on these things, then I think you'd have to recommend either the NetDim or the flashcard reader, really, because it does get expensive, especially if you're a collector and you want all the inlays and inserts and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
They're at any cost, they can be very difficult to get hold of, and they can double the value or more of a game just because it's got the inlay and the moves list and the instruction manual and things like that. So
yeah, that's right.
I would definitely recommend just going the route of one of the flashcards Unless it's your thing and you've got a lot of money to burn, then, and you enjoy that, then yeah, that's go for collecting, but be warned, it's not cheap.
That's right.
Okay, so I think we've come to the end of that first part. First of all, I want to talk about some of the Naomi ports on the Dreamcast. I believe there were around 60, possibly more than 60 Naomi ports on the Dreamcast, which is an incredible number when you think about it. A lot of the Naomi games really defines the Dreamcast, for me at least. What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that relationship between the two, it's often commented as an extension of the relationship between the Neo Geo AES and MVS.
Yeah.
And it's that era has sort of ended, and Dreamcast was sort of the last contender to that throne. You know, arcade home hardware being aligned and games not only moving from Naomi to Dreamcast, but even from Dreamcast back to Naomi. So Street Fighter Alpha 3 Upper was a port. Street Fighter Alpha 3 began on the one of the Capcom boards.
Yeah, CPS2.
Yeah, and then was ported to Dreamcast, then from Dreamcast back to Naomi with the additional features of the home release.
It's got a complicated history, that game. I heard, I don't know if it's true, but I heard that it was ported from the CPS2 to PlayStation and then ported from the PlayStation to the Dreamcast and then from a Dreamcast to the Naomi. And that's why a lot of people, the purists, they don't rate the Dreamcast, but personally I can't notice a difference, but apparently there's frames missing and some other stuff.
Oh, really?
But they don't rate it as highly as the Sega Saturn version.
Right.
But, I mean, the Sega Saturn version is so expensive, you're better off just buying the arcade board. I mean, I think the arcade board's even cheaper now than buying the home version on Saturn, which is crazy when you think about it.
Yeah, that is crazy.
But yeah, sorry, I'm getting a bit off topic. Carry on, Scott.
Yeah, I haven't really thought about because I always kept them isolated. It's like if it existed on Dreamcast, I played the Dreamcast version, and if it didn't exist on Dreamcast, I went and sought it on Naomi. So I don't have a lot of just off the top of my head things that were on both. I guess when you think about things like Crazy Taxi and things, it's a lot simpler to buy that and play that on the Dreamcast because setting up an analog steering wheel for your arcade hardware is a lot more complicated.
Yeah.
So a lot of those games that require analog controls are harder to play on the Naomi than they are on the Dreamcast. So
yeah, I've not gone out of the realms of just standard sticks and buttons as of yet. There's just a lot of effort really for playing them when most of the exclusive, there are a few, but most of the exclusives, there are quite a few exclusives that require extra hardware, but each extra piece of hardware, there's, for example, racing. There's F355-2, for example, but it takes a lot of effort. If you want to play that game, it takes a hell of a lot of effort to play that game on Naomi. And then once you've done it, there's not really any other games you can use it for, so you really are going to a lot of... especially if you're like you are, splicing up your own system. To go to all that effort for just one or two games... It just seems a bit much for me. So I same as you, for some of the games I stick to just playing them on Dreamcast.
Yeah.
First of all, should we talk about the shooting games on the Naomi, the Dreamcast ports from the Naomi?
Yeah, sure.
When I say shoot, I mean light gun games. We had House of the Dead 2, Lupin the Third, The Shooting, and both of those also received a typing version, in the arcade at least. Lupin didn't get a release on Dreamcast, unfortunately, but have you ever played those typing games in the arcades or seen them?
Yeah, I went out of my way to get Lupin the Third, The Shooting, The Typing.
Did you?
I did, because it was on Yahoo Auctions once, and the giant keyboard panel was with the game for sale.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. So I picked that up and got it shipped to Australia. It was very expensive. And in the end, because I didn't have space for that giant panel, I just because if you've seen it,
yeah, I've seen pictures. Yeah,
it's just two standard Dreamcast keyboards, And then the wires from those keyboards go under the panel to a tiny little PCB, which converts the keyboard to the JVS standard for the Naomi to work. So I just unscrewed that PCB, and I have a Dreamcast keyboard, and I onsold the keyboard panel to someone else who's now using it for their Dreamcast as a special keyboard controller. And I've got the little piece that converts it to work on the Naomi. And I quite enjoyed Lupin the Third, the shooting, the typing. It's quite fun. I'm not good enough at Japanese characters in order to type the Japanese words fast enough, but I've had fun with it. So it's a good title, and it's a shame. I don't think it's been ported to anything else. So if you want to play it, you've got to invest in a Naomi.
I did, for some reason, I read somewhere on a forum or something that there was a Windows port, but I've researched it as best I can, and I can't find any evidence that it ever existed. So maybe there were plans, but it just never surfaced. And House of the Dead 2, the same. And Typing of the Dead 2, I'm sure many people out there have played that one.
Yep.
That's great fun. Confidential Mission?
No, I haven't. I've got it on Dreamcast. So I haven't actually played it. I'm in a weird limbo zone where I have the hardware and the gun and the games, but I don't have a CRT TV set up in order to do it.
Yeah.
I do have a CRT TV just, you know, in storage, but yeah, it's just been too much hassle to get it all set up, and even more hassle to get it working on a Naomi.
It's kind of, I mean, as you know, it's kind of similar to Virtual Cop, but it doesn't have the same character. It's not quite as good as Virtual Cop, but it's still a good title. And then the last two remaining Light Gun games are the two Death Crimson games. Have you tried them? I've never played them, but I've heard they're not that great.
Yeah, no, I haven't. They're in the collection, but yeah. nearly every time you'll ask me, have you played them? It's like, no, I've got them. They're sitting there waiting to be played. I just haven't had time.
Retirement. Yeah,
that's retirement. Right. Yeah, that's what I tell everyone. Yeah, it's my retirement investment. Yeah. So once I retire, I'll be able to play all these games I've accumulated. Yeah.
Okay, well, in terms of action games, action shooting games, we got Outrigger, Spawn in the Demon's Hands, Charge and Blast, and Kirosenshi Gundam Renpo vs. Zeon Deraxu. Out of those, I played quite a bit of Spawn close to its release. I really enjoyed that one with friends. I mean, there's not much of a game in single player, but it's a good laugh with friends. Same with Outrigger, really. Outrigger is a great game. It's a shame that I think in PAL regions it didn't have online functionality, so never really got to fully experience it, but it was definitely a good game.
Yeah. There was a special trackball control for that on the Naomi?
Yes, yeah. It's a, like you say, it's a joystick and a trackball, I believe.
Yeah.
And the joystick was kind of like a flight joystick, kind of in style. And then that trackball, I've never seen it in real life. I've never seen it for sale either, but it does look interesting. But I believe, it's a lot of, even if I did see one, it wouldn't be cheap. And I think that's the only game it supports.
Yeah.
So I think it might be an analog joystick. So then perhaps you could use it with some of the other analog games. I'm not sure, but.
Potentially, yeah. Mm. Often those things you think will be cross-compatible actually aren't cross-compatible, and then you end up, it's only one-time use.
Mm.
I've only messed about with Outrigger a bit on the Dreamcast, but yeah, it's good fun.
Yeah, and then Charge and Blast, not very good game, to be honest. It's kind of like a gallery shooting game controlled with a joystick. It's okay, I suppose, but I couldn't recommend it. And then the Gundam games, which are pretty pants in my opinion, to be honest, but there you go. They're the cheapest games on the Naomi, though, so...
That's right, yeah.
If you want to bulk up a Naomi collection, get those. Uh, Okay, moving on. Racing games. Crazy Taxi, F355, and 18 Wheeler. All got Dreamcast ports. Do you play much of those?
I played a lot of Crazy Taxi. Not so much the other two. But mainly on Dreamcast, because I've only just recently bought a wheel for my Naomi. And I mainly use that for games that weren't ported to Dreamcast. So, so that's the initial D series and... the sequel to 18 Wheeler Route 66. I've got those working on Naomi, but they're both Naomi 2 games, I think.
Yeah, and both of those did actually get ports onto PS2, didn't they? Yeah. So you can hunt those down if you want. I mean, we don't need to talk anymore about Crazy Taxi. We all know it's a fantastic game. Everyone loves it. And I think that's it's a case where, as with a lot of these ports, you're almost better off sticking with the Dreamcast version because they've got extra features like Crazy Taxi had the crazy box, crazy pyramid or whatever it is, where they've got extra challenges and things. So
I think it had the original arcade only had one city to drive around.
Yes, you're right, yeah. Oh, wait, no, that's Crazy Taxi 2, isn't it?
I've forgotten. There's one of them.
Crazy Taxi 2 had the Big Apple, and it was basically New York, and it had the original, like, San Francisco-inspired level. I think original Crazy Taxi just... Did it have an extra city? I can't remember now.
I think it had an arranged city that used a lot of the assets of the other city, but it was a completely different layout, I think, from memory. But I could be wrong, getting it mixed up with Crazy Taxi 2.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, to be honest. Okay, moving on. F355, that's a great game. Fantastic game. It's a little too sim-like for me, but it's definitely a good one, definitely worth picking up.
Virtually impossible to get working on a Naomi setup unless you actually buy
the three
monitor. Yeah,
and from what I've heard, it's for those listening. You maybe saw it at the time. It's a tri-monitor setup, three monitors, two for your peripheral and one for as the main screen. And I think I heard inside the hardware side, it's actually got four Naomi systems inside it, one for each screen, and then one to sync all three of them together or something like that, which is insane.
Yeah. There's a special hardware to link them all up like that. Yeah.
There you go. There's a challenge for you, Scott. Get that sub. Yeah. You know. Okay, on to one of the two genres that the Naomi and the Dreamcast are most famous for, fighting and beat 'em up games. There's just too many for me to list. Actually, no, there's not. Let me go. Okay. Zombie Revenge, Giant Grand 2, Giant Grand 2000, WWF Royal Rumble, New Japan Pro Wrestling, Tōkon Retsuden 4, Dead or Alive, Power Stone, Power Stone 2, Marvel vs. Capcom 2, Project Justice, Capcom vs. SNK, Capcom vs. SNK 2, Capcom vs. SNK Pro, Guilty Gear, Street Fighter Alpha 3, and Denosenki Bacharon Oratorio Tenguramu, the Virtuon game. Which of those are some of your favourites, Scott?
Oh,
Would you like me to repeat the list again? No,
yeah, no, it's fine.
Okay.
I love. If I was highlighting favourites, Power Stone, Guilty Gear, Street Fighter Alpha 3. I'll go with those three.
Yeah, me saying Power Stone was one of the games I got at launch. I got Sonic Adventure and Power Stone, and I loved it. I played it religiously. Played it with friends, played it single player, played the VMU games. It's absolutely fantastic.
Yep.
I don't know about you, but I was almost a little disappointed with the sequel. I got the sequel on import. I think it was the first import game I ever purchased, and it just didn't feel quite right. It just wasn't what I was expecting for some reason.
Yeah. I don't really remember Power Stone 2. I'm sure I've played it a bit, but Power Stone made a big impression. Mm. It would be hard to follow up with an even better game than Power Stone.
It is good fun. If you've got four friends, then it's a great laugh, but it just didn't... I mean, it by no means is Power Stone 1 a, like, hardcore competitive fighting game.
No.
But Power Stone 2 felt even less, like, competitive. It felt more like just a clusterfuck, excuse my language, of stuff going on everywhere. And it is great fun in four-player mode, but I definitely prefer the original myself.
Yeah, me too.
But other than that, my favourite 2D beat-em-up on the system has got to be Capcom vs. SNK 2. I thought that was amazing. At university, I played that a lot with friends. And at the time, I mean, it doesn't seem anything special now, but at the time, Capcom and SNK making a game together, that was that's like almost as crazy as Mario and Sonic being in a game together, which also happened.
Yeah,
there you go.
Several years later. Yeah, I got too overwhelmed with the Capcom versus SNK games, I think. Just trying to please everybody with all the different isms and things. But that's just me and my unfamiliarity, I suppose, with the different ways that the beat-em-up genre evolved through both the Capcom and SNK games. So if I was more hardcore, I would love it more. But because I don't know enough, it sort of confuses me and bewilders me a little bit. Not as much as some of the other more focused singular games like Guilty Gear or Street Fighter Alpha 3. It's just... there's less confusion.
No, that's a fair point. And if you're more of a Capcom fan and not so bothered about SNK, then there's not really as much appeal, I suppose. I don't know.
Yeah, I would like to love it, but I just didn't really get into it. And I'd like to return to it after being more schooled in the ways of the beat-em-up. But yeah, one of these days.
Other than that, well, Zombie Revenge is a fantastic... But I say fantastic, it's good for a couple plays through and then you can put it on the shelf and never play it again. But it's a good laugh. Last time I looked, it's not that expensive. I'd definitely recommend that one.
Yeah. Closest thing to Streets of Rage, isn't it?
Yeah.
Did it start? Rumoured to be starting as a Streets of Rage 4?
Did it?
I think so. Unless I'm making something up. It's now rumoured to be...
Don't worry, Scott. Just check the comments the day after.
Yeah, yeah, that's right, yeah.
There'll be some angry guy, "You're wrong! It wasn't ever supposed to be Streets of Rage." Other than that, again, WWF Royal Rumble. There's quite a few here that are great, like multiplayer games at home.
Yeah, interesting. Soul Calibur was not on the list because it's such a high-profile Dreamcast game, but it didn't actually come out on Naomi. It was on the...
Yeah, it came out on the Namco System 12.
Yeah, that's right.
I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's often cited as a Naomi port by many people, but yeah, good point laying out. It's not at all.
Yep.
But it's actually one of the few examples of a port that's far superior to an arcade version, along with another System 12 game, Tekken Tag Tournament. Both of them. I own the original Soul Calibur arcade board, and it's very rough around the edges. They're running on the same board as Tekken 3 was, and I believe Tekken 2 as well.
Oh, okay.
So they were a little dated by the time they got their ports, and Namco did a great job of touching them up. They look much better on Dreamcast and PS2, respectively. Yeah. But yeah. Okay, that's for the beat-em-ups. Next, sports. Virtua Striker 2, Power Smash, Power Smash 2, Virtua NBA. Virtua NBA didn't get a release as Virtua NBA, but I believe it was the base on which NBA 2K was developed. If you look at... I've tried to research this, and I can't find any information, but if you just look at the two games, look at the models, the crowds, the viewpoint, it's very similar. The gameplay as well, very, very similar. So I believe they use Virtua NBA as a base for that game. Next, Cosmic Smash, Sports Jam, and Virtua Athlete. Got any favourites from that list?
Cosmic Smash. I played Cosmic Smash to death on my Naomi. I haven't played the Dreamcast version. I do have the Dreamcast version, but I exclusively played it to death on Naomi, and I loved every minute of it. I can keep going back to that, trying high score chasing that for years to come. It's a brilliant game.
Yeah, it is. It's fantastic. I'm the same. I used to have it for my Naomi, but I sold the cart and I just play it on the CF reader now. But it's a great game.
Oh, I ended up buying a second version of Cosmic Smash with all of the inlays and the marquee and things because I wanted those things as well because I loved it so much. And then I sold my original version. Yeah. I need help.
See, people, if you're... and how much more expensive was that, or wasn't it?
It wasn't too bad. I think they ended up being high-quality copies rather than original inlays and marquees and stuff. But it was good enough for me, so...
Yeah, you see, people, this is the dangerous road you're going down. If you've got any obsessive-compulsive traits in terms of collecting like Scott has, then beware.
That's right.
Your wallet is not going to thank you for if you get into Naomi collecting.
No, it's not.
Okay, next. Puzzle, Sega Tetris, Puyo Puyo Fever, and Musapi's Choco Marker. Have you ever heard of that game? I had not even heard of it until recently. I did order it this week, actually, on Yahoo Auctions, but it's not arrived yet, so I've not had a chance to give it a go.
Yeah, I've got it. I've played it a bit, and I haven't played it to death, but what I've had played it is I enjoyed. It's very interesting, unique kind of puzzler.
Hmm.
It's sort of you're in the middle of a sphere, I suppose, and things are coming at you from all sides, and you're sort of rotating the sphere in the middle with your little strange furry
what is he?
Bear something, I don't know. I think it's a bear character. Yeah, it's good. I'm not sure if there's anything else quite like it. It's one of the Dreamcast's and Naomi's unique titles, but I could be wrong. There could be something similar to it elsewhere, but yeah, I've never seen anything like it before.
I wouldn't go as far as saying it's similar. It's quite different, but it kind of reminds me a bit of, it's the Roman numerals XI, I think. So 11, or I don't know if it's called 11 or XI, or something like that. It's a game on, to be fair, it's quite different. It's a game on PlayStation 1 where you're like, you're a creature on top of a dice, and you're moving a dice around. I haven't played it yet, but just looking at the screenshots online, it reminded me of that, but it's still, the concept is quite different, like you say.
Yeah.
Other than that, Sega Tetris is only noteworthy for one thing, and that's that it's one of the, I think, only five, or is it four or five games that are compatible with the Tyson cable that allows you to link up two Dreamcasts.
Oh, that's right.
To play on two sets. But I mean, I don't know about you, but for me, I mean, I've never had any burning desire to play Tetris two-player on two different screens. I mean, split screen works fine for Tetris.
That's quite true, yeah.
But there you go. It's one of his only games, so if you do spend $300-$400 or whatever it is to get one of those cables, then you may as well pick it up, I suppose. But
does it facilitate four players across two halves of the screen?
No. You can only link up two Dreamcast consoles, of course, but you can do two-player split screen on each, I don't know.
Maybe.
I'd guess you can.
That would make sense, because four players is quite, the wells are quite narrow for one screen, but maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, I suppose, especially back in the day then, when everyone was playing on smaller CRTs, I suppose it would be kind of cool, yeah.
I could be, again, I'm making something up that was not actually the case.
No, I can confirm it's fact. You can play Tetris four-player, two-player on each screen by the Tyson link cable. Okay. Don't come complaining to me after you spend $500. Okay, next. Rhythm games. Samba de Amigo, Puyo Puyo Da, and this is a nice bit of Dreamcast-related trivia that I like to bring out. You've probably seen it before. What is the only... I'll do this later. This will come to the ports. But yes, okay. So sorry, Samba de Amigo and Puyo Puyo Da. Have you tried most? I mean, I played a bit of Samba de Amigo when it first came out. I've never seen or played the Naomi original. But yeah, it's a quality game. But yeah. I did find the controllers, they're a bit. They're not too good at. Sometimes they don't recognize exactly where you're shaking your maraca and stuff, and it can lead to you missing a combo or something like that. That's what I found anyway.
I'm just terrible at rhythm action games, so I'm quite happy to blame the controller if that's the case.
Yeah. There you go. And Puyo Puyo Da, it's a fun little rhythm game. I've played it a bit, but I couldn't recommend it. And it's not super expensive, but it's not a cheapie. So, I mean, if you're a hardcore collector, pick it up. But if you look online, there's a lot of people saying it's fantastic and rating quite highly. But yeah, to me, it's just a bog standard rhythm game, really. But there you go.
I haven't tried it, so I can't add anything.
don't bother. Yeah. Anyway. Finally, the second genre that Naomi and Dreamcast are most well known for, shmups. What are your favourite shmup Naomi ports, Scott?
I quite like Trizeal because I quite liked its minimalist design. It's very simple, not hard to get your head around. I played it quite a lot, and I quite like the story behind it, the release of it, and the developer. You know, just one guy in his bedroom producing a Dreamcast game and, you know, looking for support from the community to keep his tiny little company afloat. It's like quite liked all that. And Under Defeat is one of my But it would have to be if you held a gun to my head, my favorite Dreamcast game of all time would be Under Defeat above all else.
Really, you rated that highly?
Yeah, I loved it to death. It's by far the most beautiful Dreamcast game, and everything about it is wonderful. The difficulty curve is perfect. It's my favorite game. I love it.
I think actually Mike agreed with you, didn't he? I think we had a discussion recently. Mike agreed with you that it's the most beautiful Dreamcast game of all time. I wouldn't agree. I mean, I think it's a beautiful game, but I wouldn't personally. I know it's a bit mainstream, and you get a lot of like the hardcore shmup fans giving it a bit of slack. But Ikaruga is by far probably my favorite shmup of all time. It's a game that got me into shmups, and it's beautiful. And I'd definitely place that up there as the best.
Yeah, I need to spend more time with it. I think I don't hate it, but I haven't really got into it yet.
Yeah, play on easy mode. I would play on easy mode. It's the word easy is pretty misleading, to be honest, because there's still nothing easy about it. But it's a little less, it's a little more forgiving than medium or hard mode. So yeah, give it a go. It's quality. The music's great. The chaining system where you have to match destroying three of the same color of enemies is also really cool. And you can play the game for weeks and not even notice that chaining system, not even care about it, just play and enjoy the game. But then when you the chaining system starts to click and you realize that like every one of these levels with all the different patterns of enemies have all been designed so that it's possible for you to keep a chain going throughout the entire game, and then watch some of the videos on YouTube, and it's impressive.
Yeah, I've wanted to explore those depths in it, but I've just never had the time to sit down and really sort of dig deep into it. But yeah, I can see that it was something. It's something I would probably get obsessed by if I get into it, but I just haven't actually got around to getting into it.
Mm. As other than Ikaruga, there's one other shmup that is up there definitely for me, and that's Zero Gunner 2. I absolutely love that game. It's kind of similar to Gunspike in the way you control your helicopter and stuff, but it's much, much better in my opinion, and the music's great. The only thing I'd say, a 1cc is definitely doable if you play it enough and practice enough, but the seventh level, or for the final level to me, is just ridiculous. I don't know how anyone could possibly ever come close to once he's seeing that final level. It's ridiculous. But other than that, it's a great game. Definitely one of my favorites. Any other noteworthy shmups you want to mention?
I could spend hours talking about shoot 'em ups.
Yeah, we better move on. We're spending an hour. So, okay, we'll give you a quickly mention the games we haven't mentioned. Giga Wing 2, Border Down. Again, Border Down's a fantastic shmup, in my opinion. Shikigami 2, Cyveria 2, Chaos Field, Trigger Heart, Exelica, which you can also get on 360, and actually a few of these you can get on 360 and other systems. Karas, which isn't that good.
I'm glad you said it.
Why is that?
I've never been sure how to pronounce it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
it's Crow, isn't it? Yeah. It's like the closest approximation of Crow.
And I'm doubting myself now, so I'm going on to Japanese dictionary online quickly. Karasu. Yes, Karas. I don't know why, but when they romanized it, they spelt it as Kadaus or something.
Yeah.
That's not at all what it is. If you look at the character or the katakana on the case, like you said, it's Crow, which is Katatsu, so it's Karas. Mm. But yeah, that and Radilji, they're kind of... I'm not even sure how you pronounce that one. I've not got the kana in front of me. And again, they romanized it in different ways. But those two, some people love them, but I didn't really warm to either of them, but
yeah, I don't hate them, but I haven't really got into them either. They got a unique style which I appreciate, but don't necessarily fall in love with.
Mm.
And just briefly, Cyveria 2, the subtitle, "The Will to Fabricate," I reckon is the greatest subtitle.
The Will to Fabricate. Yeah,
that is absolutely brilliant.
I wonder what they translated that from. It's definitely some Japanglish going on there. Okay, we'll move on now to the second part of our coverage of the games. Let's talk about the Naomi exclusives, the ones that you can't get on Dreamcast or any other system. So the only way for you to play these is with a Naomi or an emulator. What are some of your favourites?
Let's see. The game that got me started in Naomi was Exile, which was part of the Shooting Love 2007 compilation. It's brilliant. Mm. I love both the normal Exile standard, you know, level shoot 'em up, and the shooting game, the skills test. Yeah, it's brilliant. I quite like it too. It's lots of fun.
Yeah.
So testing different scenarios of tank rush and, you know, accuracy and dodging asteroids in the field. And I quite like at the end, after you've been through the test and it gives you a score, you get to shoot cans into the recycling bin to a quite mellow, chilled out background music, which is just quite fun.
Yeah, I tried it once in a Japanese arcade. I saw it there and I was like, oh, I'll give that a go. And they were like, it was in this area of the arcade was full of shmups, and like a few Japanese people I could see were like looking at me out the corner of their eyes, and I just like died straight away. And on my last life, I was almost like, come on, please, just hurry up and die so I can leave. And then I quickly escaped the arcade as quickly as possible. But yeah, it seemed all right. And it's also worth mentioning that the Xbox 360 version of that came with an 8-player version of Pengu, I think, which I've not tried.
Yeah, there's a lot of cross-pollination between a lot of those releases from Triangle Service. There's like Shooting Love and Arcade Love and some other games that they've released that are sort of, there's a bit of a confusing history about what goes in what. But yeah, there's a couple of 360 ports from different sort of compilations that they've worked on.
Okay, we'll go taking turns. I'll go next. I'll mention one that I like. And actually, I'll mention two because they're kind of similar. Same kind of game, Slash Out and Spiker's Battle.
Oh, yeah.
For me, Slash Out is the number one Naomi exclusive that you can use just with regular sticks and buttons. So you don't need a complicated setup to play it. It didn't come out on any consoles, and it's a great little game. It's a sequel to, well, it's a kind of a spiritual successor to the earlier Spike Out games.
Yep.
That, funnily enough, none of them, although they're great games and were especially extremely popular in Japan, they are maybe what the successor to Streets of Rage in terms of where Sega went with that kind of thing.
Definitely.
In the arcade, they were the first ever, I believe this to be true, they were the first game that allowed you to connect four arcade machines together and play four player, each of your own individual screen, like battling out.
Ah, didn't know that.
Yeah, would you agree that the controls are a little difficult to get used to, aren't they?
After hearing your glowing review of it, I need to go back and play it some more because I've only really given it a quick sort of test when I first bought it.
There are a lot of fans of the Spike Out and Slash Out series, but there are a lot of people who don't rate it so highly, and I think it's down to that learning curve. Like, in simple terms, there's a lock-on button, so you have to lock on to the enemies while you're moving around, and it's kind of difficult to know when to lock on and when to control your character freely.
Okay.
Once you get the hang of it, they are good, but the difficulty is incredibly high. They're designed to be coin munchers.
Yeah.
You're just going to have to be continuously pressing the coin button on whatever setup you've got. But they're both good games. Spiker's Battle is similar kind of game, but the gameplay is almost identical, but it drops the free roaming beat 'em up Streets of Rage style in favor of like an arena battle system where it's like you and a second player can fight like three or four enemies at once in an arena, and then when you defeat them, you move on to the next stage. It's good fun. It's not as good as Slash Out, in my opinion. It's not as good as the earlier Spike Out games, but it's still all right. Maybe not worth paying the prices for, but certainly worth loading up on an emulator or with the CF card reader. Next, go.
I'm quite fond of, and I'm going to murder this pronunciation, Akatsuki Blitzkampf auf Asha.
What? What's that? I've never heard of it.
It was a Dojin 2D fighter that started off on Windows, and the Off Asha version came out on Naomi, which roughly translates to mobile version or something.
Right.
It's a World War II themed 2D beat 'em up.
What?
It has the unfortunate nickname in some circles of Jew Puncher. but it doesn't actually.
Oh dear!
It doesn't actually involve any Jew punching.
Hitler's not a playable character.
No,
is
no,
it?
No. It's an alternate history thing.
Okay.
There's no sort of direct Nazi sort of insignia or anything, but there's a style to it that feels very World War II-y. It's a very simple beat 'em up. It's not like in your upper echelon sort of Capcom SNK region, but it's very visceral, very meaty. The punches and the kicks have this impact and a sound effect that's just really satisfying. And there's this giant metallic tank character with a face which is sort of way over the top, and it's quite fun, simple sort of harmless fun, but good fun. I recommend it.
Well, there you go. I thought I knew the entire library, but you've just shown me that I don't. I definitely want to give that a go. It sounds pretty interesting. What about Toy Fighter?
Oh, yeah. Toy Fighter should have got a Dreamcast port. I don't know why I didn't get a Dreamcast port.
Well, it's because it's crap, basically, don't you think?
Oh, it's all right. It's not that...
It's got a bit of charm, but...
It's got that typical Sega Blue Sky feel, you know?
It's definitely got Sega style to it, but it's the grappling, the way you grapple in it's quite weird. I never quite... Maybe that's where I went wrong. I didn't really understand how the grappling worked on it.
Yeah, maybe I haven't spent enough time with it in order to not like it so much. But yeah, I've just had a quick go at it, and the aesthetics appealed to me. And I thought, well, I don't know, maybe you can elaborate more on it. The ring out, or the ring system with the hula hoop that sort of prevented ring outs.
Yeah,
was sort of an interesting take on the 3D arena one-on-one fighter.
Yeah, I'd love to elaborate more, but I honestly can't remember. I played it through once or twice and then sold it and never played it again. It's not great, but it does have a cameo appearance of Sonic.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, if you're an obsessive compulsive Sonic collector and you think you've got every Sonic game, well, no, you haven't.
No.
Unless you've got Toy Fighter, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like a little badly made... It looks there's like a toy in the corner of one of the rooms, and it's like a...
Oh, okay.
It looks like a badly made knockoff Sonic toy, which is kind of strange because Sega made the game, but...
Yeah!
There you go. Okay, your turn.
The Melty Blood series.
Ah, yeah.
Quite fond of those. Again, they were rumoured to be heading towards Dreamcast at some point, but never actually did.
I think it did. I've got it on PS2. One of them did get a PS2 release eventually, but...
Yeah. I think it had the similar sort of complicated port history to Street Fighter 3 that it went Naomi... No, PC, Naomi, PS2, PC, Naomi, back to Naomi again or something. Yeah. And in all of those ports, there was never a Dreamcast part of that chain, which was a bit disappointing.
Well, it was probably a bit late, wasn't it? But
it was...
What year was that released? I don't know. It was definitely towards the end.
Yeah, in the last couple of years, you know, the 2006, 2007, which the Dreamcast was still getting some support. So there was the potential for them to consider it, but yeah, it didn't happen. So yeah, there's a couple of Melty Bloods on Naomi. There's the Act Cadenza and Actress again.
Have they got any features in them that like separate them from other 2D beat-em-ups?
They probably do, but I'm just, again, just fond of the aesthetics and haven't really delved too deeply into them.
Okay, well, there's one that I can't believe neither of us has mentioned so far. This is definitely one to check out. Dynamite KG.
Oh, yeah.
Or Dynamite Decker, yep. Depending how you're reading it. Dynamite KG EX Asian Dynamite.
Definitely, yeah. Can't believe I haven't mentioned it yet.
Yeah, that's one of the, I mean, craziest, like, am I dreaming?
Yeah.
I mean, when you play, it's amazing this game exists. In short, it's, I'm sure a lot of you have played the Dynamite Cop series. So Dynamite Cop 2, I believe, was originally a Sega Model 2 arcade game? Or was it Model 3? I can't remember. It was one of them.
Yeah.
But it got a port to Dreamcast, and I think that's where most people played that second one. It's a great game. It's, to be honest, the original is very, as it is, it's already wacky and quite out there, and like it has some pretty crazy stuff going on, whacking people over the head with giant fish.
Yeah, that's right.
Strange enemies and stuff. But this Naomi version, the history of it is quite interesting. It was, I don't know how, but a Chinese development team were licensed by Sega to make this game, and it's basically a reskin. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah.
It's basically the same game, almost, but it's reskinned. Instead of being set on a, was it a tanker ship or something? In the original, a cargo ship, it's now set in Hong Kong,
it's
right?
It's an assault on a tower, isn't it? It's like a tower assault.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And the layout of all the levels and order and everything is exactly the same, but all the textures, the enemies and the backgrounds, everything, they've all been changed. And the key gameplay mechanic that separates this from the original is you can, each character, there's three characters, and like laying around the levels or when you defeat enemies, they drop cards. And there's three different cards for each character. Each of these cards, when you pick them up, they change your fighting style. And some of them are really wacky. I'm trying to think of what they are now. There's one, I remember there's one that when you pick up the card, you turn into like a, you know, knights from a Sega Saturn, like a knights looking jester character who throws cards at people.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
What others were there? There's a Rambo looking guy. When you pick up another card, you turn into like a dual wielding Rambo character.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty insane.
my brain is blocking it out, yeah. the memories are refusing to come back because it's too surreal.
Yeah, definitely. That one, though, definitely play it on emulator, give it a go. You won't regret it. Did you enjoyed it, though?
Yeah, yeah, I played it to the end and it's good fun, yeah. What would you say was the Naomi killer app out of all of these?
Exclusives?
Yeah.
Maybe that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I reckon it could be that one. Yeah,
could be that. I mean, maybe we're not selling it very well, because a lot of people say, oh, well, I've already got it on Dreamcast. And yes, you have, but you haven't.
Yeah, like, that's right.
It's really a completely different experience, yeah. And definitely worth playing. For me, that and Slash Out are the two.
And the bowl of noodles in the face after you've lost.
What? Yeah. What's that?
At the end of Dynamite Decker EX, when the game's over, it goes to a ramen house guy and he just gives you a bowl of noodles with game over written in it, I think.
I can't remember that. Yeah. Crazy, crazy. And how that relationship began with Sega and its Chinese developer, I have no idea. But
yeah, it was a test for them, wasn't it? To see whether they were worth dealing with in the future, I think. I think it was some kind of, you know...
Was it?
Yeah, go and make a game for Naomi based on, you know, these assets and see how you go.
Well, I don't remember them... I don't remember hearing anything about this team after
no.
Asian Dynamite, but that's a shame. Yeah. But yeah, worth picking up, definitely.
Yep.
Okay, and finally, we'll move on to a topic I've been covering in some of my recent expanding the Dreamcast collection library. Let's look at some ports of Naomi games that didn't come to the Dreamcast, but did come to other consoles. So if you're looking for like some games with a very Dreamcast feel that were designed and developed for similar hardware, then look no further. These are the games for you. The first big obvious one that everyone knows and loves, Super Monkey Ball.
Yeah.
And I think maybe people don't realize that started as a... People usually associate that game with the GameCube more than anything else, and they don't perhaps realize the history that it started as a Naomi game. Real shame, but in a separate timeline where the Dreamcast had been a success, well, we would have got a Super Monkey Ball on a Dreamcast.
It would have only needed 12 more months of support for the Dreamcast, and we would have got a Monkey Ball.
Hmm. But yeah, were you a fan of the game?
Yeah, yeah, I haven't. Again, you know, I'm sounding like a broken record. I haven't really given it much of a go. But yeah, brings back memories of Marble Madness, yeah, which is a good thing.
Yeah, I played it when I was in, I must have been in senior school or high school, as you'd call it in America. Me and my friends got really into it, trying to do the medium and hard on one credit. I never did, but I had a friend who did the hard mode on one credit, and I think after you do that, you unlock some extra super extreme stages or something.
Oh, okay.
Are there any games, any ports on other systems that you're a fan of?
I think I'll probably let you take over this one, because I only have a few of them.
Okay, well, don't tell anyone. I've got a list in front of me, so
yeah.
Make it easier for me to remember. Senko no Ronde for Xbox 360 and its sequel. It got a release in the West as well, but it's got a different name. It's called Wartek, and it's actually very cheap. It's less than £10. I think it's about £7 or £8 last time I looked. It's a cross. It's a very interesting concept what we did here. They tried to cross shmup, like bullet hell shmups with a one-on-one fighting game. And you're basically like two robot characters flying around each other, shooting each other, unleashing specials that fill the screen with bullets. And you've obviously got to dodge each other's bullets like you would in a shmup and attack the other character. Yeah, great game. It had online support back in the day that I did try a few times, but the only people ever playing it were these hardcore Japanese guys, and they just like laughed in my face and destroyed me.
Yeah, those two games were some of the ones that I deliberately tracked down for the Naomi, because I'm a big fan of the Goo. I think is it pronounced Goo Rev? Like, it's written G Rev, but I think it's pronounced Goo.
Oh, is it? Oh, I don't know.
I had heard that, but I could have been mistaken. So it's G.
To be honest, I've never seen it written in katakana, but yeah, I always just knew them as G Rev, as it looks in English. But
yeah, the two games I've been meaning to really get into on the Naomi, and it took a long time to track them down, but yeah, I haven't had a chance to delve too deeply. Is it still fun in single player, or is it more fun in multiplayer?
Yes. Oh, it's more fun in multiplayer, but then it's very difficult to get. I mean, unless you've got a friend and you both go into it blind and you both have never played it before, then yeah, you're going to have some good fun with it. But like, if you've played it a lot and then you bring a friend round, like, it's such a unique like concept that you're just going to defeat him with ease easily.
Right.
And then on the flip side, if you go online and play, which I don't know, I doubt the servers are still online, but if they are, you're just going to get destroyed by these hardcore Japanese guys. So I'm sure it's a fantastic game. I'm sure that Senko Deronde is a great multiplayer game, but it's very difficult to find, to like get the correct circumstances to play and enjoy it. Right. There you go.
Yeah.
Moving down the list, there's a few shooting games. Ninja Assault for PS2, which is like a ninja-themed light gun shooting game, and Biohazard Gun Survivor. That was quite a popular game on PS2. I've never played it myself, but it got fair reviews, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, other than that, we mentioned it earlier, Shooting Club 2000 on the 360, which is in a few of the compilations. We've come to the time where I get to ask my...
The thing you foreshadowed earlier.
My trivia, yeah. Okay, guys, here's a question for you. Name me a Nintendo Dreamcast game. It's okay, I'll give you 5 or 6 seconds. No, you can't do it, can you? Okay, so, Rhythm Tengoku. I'm not sure if Rhythm Tengoku started on the Game Boy Advance or if it started on the Naomi, but there is a Naomi version. I've played it. It's got Nintendo written all over the cabinet and in the game. So there you go, a Nintendo game that was made for Naomi. Naomi is basically Dreamcast, so there you go, a Nintendo game on the Naomi.
Yep, piece of pub trivia there for you.
There you go, yeah. Use that to impress people on Facebook. Yeah.
That's right.
Work for me. But yeah, it's a great game as well. It's very quirky and good fun.
Yeah, since you've mentioned it, I've been meaning to get it onto a compact flash card, see if I can get it working on the Naomi, but it's probably got a unique...
Yeah.
Has it got a unique sort of control system?
It has, and I there is one guy in another group I'm a member of. There is one guy who designed, he made his own panel. But it is just buttons, so it's nothing.
Yeah.
To be honest, I'm not sure if he... Maybe you can just use joystick and buttons, but maybe he just designed this control panel so that it would feel like the arcade version. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'll have to look into
it. But it's nothing complicated. They're just simple, like, one-off buttons, so I'm sure you can do it. Other than that... what's it called? Illmatic Envelope,
yep.
For the Wii. What is that? I don't even know what that is, but I've got it here on my list.
It's another milestone shooter in the same developer that brought Karos and Radiology. So it's another one in that sort of the cel-shaded shoot 'em up style game from that developer. So if you weren't a fan of Karos and Radiology, you're probably not a fan of Illmatic Envelope either.
Oh, there you go. And also... I've played this one on Naomi. I haven't played the 360 port. Mamoru-kun wa noroware ware chishi... what's this? 1 second.
Shimata.
Noroware chishimata. Yeah. I think I've played this one. This is... It's like a little shoot-em-up where you're you're this little girl, right, walking around. Am I thinking of the right game? You're a little girl, like, scrolling up the screen. Sometimes you scroll left a bit and right a bit.
Is it a girl or a boy? Because it's a...
Is it a girl or a boy?
Kun usually...
Mamoru-kun, yeah. He's a boy.
It's a feminine-looking boy, yeah.
Maybe it just looks like a girl. My memories are of a girl. But did you... I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, I've been meaning to get... Again, it's another Gurev or G-Rev title, so I've been meaning to get into it myself as well. But yeah, it looks good. But yeah, I can't really comment. I haven't had much experience.
Yeah, and then just to wrap it up, we've got the previously mentioned Melty Blood for PS2, Guilty Gear XX, Guilty Gear XX Reload, and Guilty Gear XX Accent Core, all on PS2 and a few others. And I think it's worth mentioning that the number of systems that Naomi Games reported to is quite incredible. There are Naomi ports on PS2, PS3, PS1, and I'll get back to that in a minute, PSP, Xbox, Xbox 360, GameCube, Wii, DS, 3DS, Game Boy Advance, iOS, Android, and Windows.
Wow.
Yeah, it's the reach of the Dreamcast and Naomi is really quite incredible. The PS1 game that I mentioned is, what's it called? Shaka Shaka or Tambourine or something like that?
Oh, all right. Yeah.
So on PS1, it's one of only two Sega games on PS1. And it came with, I think it was a spiritual successor to Samba de Amigo.
Yeah, that's right.
But it comes with some tambourine controllers that work in the same way as the, I think they do anyway, they work in the same way as the maracas for Samba de Amigo. And it's actually, I believe the Naomi version wasn't, but the home version was actually like crossed with some, what's it called, Mini Mini Money Money or something like that? Some Japanese pop band or something?
You know more than me. Yeah, I'm not sure.
But yeah, something like that. So for any Sega collector, definitely worth checking out the two PlayStation 1 Sega games. But there you go, and I think we're coming to a close. We've gone on long enough. We've bored you for 1 hour, 30 minutes. Is there anything you want to mention before?
Oh, I'll add a couple more things.
Go on, then.
Just briefly, I sought out all the different Guilty Gear XS versions as well for Naomi, because I'm quite a big fan.
Right.
And there are differences from each, like the Slash and the Reloaded and the Accent Cores.
I've got no idea what the differences are, so please.
I probably can't detail them to the nth degree, but, you know, backgrounds change, you know, a typical of the one-on-one fighting genre, you know, there's balancing issues that are addressed and new characters introduced. And so even though they're all Guilty Gear XS, they're all slightly different. They're all sort of progress the story and get the fighting balance right. And probably up until recently, I think Accent Core was one of the sort of upper echelon competitive fighting games that were nearly always in a tournament.
Mm.
But I think it's probably been replaced now by the latest Guilty Gear XRD, which looks absolutely stunning, but that's a topic for another time.
Yeah, it does look beautiful. I definitely want to... The one thing that's put me off in that, though, is that... going back to why I hate consoles this generation, even though they're USB, the expensive arcade sticks I bought for my PS3 and Xbox 360, I can't use in my PS4, which really puts me off, because I can use them on my PC fine, and they'll work in 5 years' time and 10 years' time on my PC just fine, so long as there's USB, but you can't on PS4, and I just thought, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, how many... They're massive arcade sticks as well. I spend a lot of money on them. I mean, how many arcade sticks can I have in my house?
That's right. Yeah. That seems quite odd. Don't understand what the reason for that is, other than, you know, just gouging more money out of you.
Yeah, exactly. So was Accent Core the last Guilty Gear game before XRD? Because I know, I mean, Blaze Blue kind of took over after Accent Core, is that right?
I think there was an Accent Core plus R or something, an even slightly more revised Accent Core. But yeah, you're right, there was a Blaze Blue period and then back to Guilty Gear XRD.
What about the Atomiz Wave Guilty Gear games? Did they come before Accent Core then, or after?
Good question.
I know one is just a remake of X.
Yeah, it was version 1.5.
And then there's one other. Oh, I know what it is. It's Slash, isn't it? It's the four-player one that wasn't received very well. No, not Slash. What's it called?
You got the right idea, but it's not called Slash. It's called something else that is escaping me. I think it started with I.
Oh, Isuka, yeah.
That's the one, yeah.
I've not played it, but maybe it's good fun if you just want to have a laugh, but I know that the competitive community didn't buy it, and fans of the series pretty much hated it.
Yeah, it's definitely outside of your expectation of a Guilty Gear game.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's not for everyone. And just briefly, there was one exclusive Naomi game we didn't mention, which was...
Oh, there are quite a few others. I just picked a few of them.
Yeah, I just mentioned briefly Sega Strike Fighter.
Oh, yeah.
Is often not really thought of often enough, and it's actually part of the Afterburner series.
Is it?
Yeah, if people were more aware it was part of the Afterburner series, it would have a more renown, but it's actually not really that well-renowned.
Well, why didn't they put Afterburner in the title, you idiots?
They should have done, shouldn't they? Yeah. And then it would have been like, oh, it's an Afterburner game, but yeah. It's the one that sits just before Afterburner Climax, so it was sort of the Afterburner game in that era. And it's a very complicated setup with pedals and joysticks and things that I have no hope of ever replicating. But I did once contemplate there was a cabinet being sold for like $500 or something.
Wow.
From some guy in the US. That was a really good price, but it was just, you know, across the Pacific.
I mean, the logistics would have been difficult enough, but I mean, the price, I'm sure that would have quadrupled in price at least, maybe even more.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I know it costs a lot to, maybe not that much, but it would cost a lot to get that transported over, especially if you're just a guy on your Todd and not like a proper company.
Yeah. Yeah, I contemplated asking him, you know, can you just, you know, gut the cabinet and send me the bits?
Oh, that'd be such a shame, though.
Yeah, it would be. Yeah.
I couldn't condone that. Like, how many of them cabs must there be? Like,
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But I could see the appeal. It would be pretty damn good having that in your house.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's also one of the three screen setups, isn't it? Like F355.
Yeah, I think there was a deluxe version. The one that was being sold was just a single screen.
But okay.
It was a stand-up cab as well, so it had the pedals at the bottom and stuff. It would have been nice if I lived close enough in order to consider picking that up, but yeah, it was too far away.
Hmm. And then there was one other three-screened, I don't know what it's... treble screen trees. I don't know what I'm saying. There was one other Naomi game with three screens, and that I think maybe there was two. There was one other, and that was Sega Flight Simulator, wasn't it?
Oh yeah.
Of course there was the driving simulator as well for Naomi 2, but we're trying to stick away from Naomi 2 because maybe in the future, if this podcast is popular and received well, then we'll do a separate podcast on the Naomi 2 and Atomiz Wave.
Yeah.
Is that it, or is there anything else to mention before we close up?
No, that'll do.
No, go ahead. We've already gone for 1 hour 40 minutes. What's another 5 minutes?
It's a special bumper issue. I was just talking about gutting the cabinets. I was just talking about the guys at giz10p.uk. Is another seller of Sega arcade stuff. I often got onto them because I was so inexperienced putting things together. Often I wanted the official cable with the official connectors on either end.
Oh, Jesus.
To make it simpler so I could plug it in. Cause I find it really difficult.
Oh, to make it simpler. Fair enough. I thought that was part of your collecting.
Oh, no. It wasn't that it had to be
official. I don't want unofficial cables in my system now.
No, but it's, I maybe it's just my inexperience, but it's really hard to find those. They're like Molex connectors, but they're not like your standard PC Molex connectors. They're all sort of unique and weird. I don't even know how to begin to search for those and then to like wire them and solder them together. It's, my entire approach was just cutting wires and splicing wires together and requiring those peculiar connectors with the wires already attached to them. And so the hunt to get my Naomi working was to hunt down some of this cabling with the specific connectors. And Giz10P helped us out a couple of times because they had some just old broken down cabinets that they were selling spare parts from. And it's like, oh, have you got the cable that connects the GD-ROM to the power supply? And it's like, oh, yeah, here's one.
And that's actually a very good point to mention that, like, if you do get one of these setups, make sure it comes with these cables and stuff, or at least factor that into the price when you're buying something, because if it doesn't come with one of the cables you need, then you're going to have to spend extra getting it separately, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and it can often be hard to track down. One thing I did with my joystick setup when I gutted the official Dreamcast arcade stick, there was a little, I think it was a 6-cable connector, and on the Sega Naomi input-output board, there's like a 5-pin thing. and the pitch of the pins was actually close enough that I could shove this six-hole connector into the five-pin receiver on the input-output board. So I managed to jerry-rig a leftover component from that Dreamcast arcade joystick into my Naomi system. You gotta look for little opportunities like that to like, reuse bits of wire and connectors and things.
Okay. I'm lost. I don't know what these words mean. Yeah, you certainly can go the way Scott's gone, or you can even simpler way. The simplest way probably is I mentioned earlier that I got a new Astro City arcade cabinet, and yeah, you need to get the few cables and the Capcom IO board, but it's not too difficult. But then even easier is if you just get a Naomi cabinet. When people say the word Naomi, there's the Naomi console, the system that we've been talking about, but there's also a Naomi cabinet, Naomi Universal cabinet, right?
Yep.
And that was designed for use with the Naomi. All you got to do is plug it in. I mean, it's no more difficult than... Well, I mean, if you can plug a Dreamcast into a TV, then you can plug a Naomi 2 into one of these cabinets. It's super easy.
Yeah, yeah. If you can find one that's sort of not far from where you live, they're probably not that expensive these days.
Yeah, they're not too bad.
It's just because they're large and bulky and heavy. Actually getting it shipped to your door can be very expensive. So keep an eye out for, if you're interested, that's the easiest way to go. Keep an eye out for one being sold relatively close to where you live and go for a drive and pick it up if you've got the spare room for one.
Yeah, I think they're probably one of the more common arcade cabinets.
Yeah, definitely.
At least in the UK, there's a lot of them. The only downside is that they don't have jammer wired up, so you can only play JVS games on them unless you get some kind of converter or something. But still, if you just want to play Naomi and if you want to play... Okay, again, we're not mentioning going into too much detail now, but if you just want to play a Thomas Wave and... a Thomas Wave, you can't play...
It's jammer as well.
It's got VGA output, but it's still just jammer, isn't it?
Yeah.
But Naomi 2, you can use on that.
Yeah, pretty much everything that's sort of around that same era. So like the Chihiro and the Triforce, they'll work on it as well.
Mm. Yeah. Oh yeah, they'll work on it, yeah. Even will newer stuff like the Lindbergh, will that work on a Naomi 2 cap?
Let me think.
Or is that HDMI? What is the connection on that?
It's got the option for both VGA and DVI.
Oh, okay.
And you can reuse a lot of your input-output stuff, like your, whatever you've got set up for Naomi.
It's like a USB connection.
Yeah, yeah. So you can reuse a lot of it. Just the power supply changed a little bit, but it's more PC standard with the Lindbergh as well. So if you've got a power supply you use with a desktop PC, then that's perfectly fine.
And then there's one other option, which probably isn't available to most of you, but in Japan... I don't know if I'm correct in saying this, but I don't think in Japan we ever got the Naomi Universal cabinet.
Oh.
I might be wrong in that, but I've never seen one. Instead, Net City and New Net City cabinets are vastly more popular, at least. They're everywhere. I've never seen a Naomi one. And they're almost identical to the Naomi in terms of like the dimensions and build. They are a little shorter because they're designed to be sit-down candy cabinets, like what's popular in Japan. I mean... I think the Universal Naomis are usually stand-up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But a lot of people do cut off the bottom to make them sit down, but I think they're all originally stand-up. But the nice feature of the New Net City, if you can get one, is it's got a tri-sync monitor, so you can play the... What is it? What, I'm going to mess up the hertz here.
Yeah, there's 15.
The middle one is 24.
And 31.
15, 24, and 31.
Yeah.
The 24 one is extremely rare. I can't think of a single game that uses this, but it's there anyway. And it's known as having one of the best like monitors of any cabinet.
Yeah.
And if you're in Japan, you can pick it up quite cheaply. I paid... pay about $250, I think.
That's quite good.
Which is ridiculous. But in Japan, they're so much cheaper than the West. Like, these are so more common. Like, some of the older cabinets, like my new Astro City, people are, like, literally, in some cases, just trying to give them away because it would cost more to dispose of them.
Mm.
One good positive point about living in Japan is arcade cabinets. You can get them quite cheap.
Yeah, that's the tri-sync monitor. Not so much an issue for Naomi because I plugged that into just a standard PC LCD monitor and had no troubles with it.
Mm.
But I did have troubles with the Triforce. I think it must be in that weird 24 kilohertz range or something.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, and like no matter what dip switches I flipped or anything to try and get it to work, it wouldn't work. And I had to get a separate PCB that converted the sync to work on a standard monitor. Because for the longest time I thought it was just a dud and it didn't work. But it was to do with this tri-sync issue.
Mm. There you go. Oh, there's one final option that I don't think either of us have ever tried. Have you ever tried emulating Naomi?
No, I haven't tried it.
Neither have I.
Well, I've never had the need to, I suppose, because I've got the original hardware. So
yeah.
I don't know whether it's still the case now, but whenever I've looked at it before, people seem to comment that the frame rate was pretty bad because it was just a bit too advanced for a PC to handle, but it may not be the case anymore.
I think in recent years, Dreamcast and, of course, subsequently, Naomi emulation has come on leaps and bounds. Now, it does look very good. I did try emulating Shenmue recently because, you know, did you hear someone released a widescreen patch or something for to emulate it, which I thought was cool?
Yeah.
I tried it, and it ran very well. It was beautiful, but there was some like glitching with the hair and a few other things. But I have watched videos online of people emulating Naomi, and it looks great. It looks fantastic. So there definitely are ways to do it if you know how. So there you go. If you can't justify the effort or the space or the money to get Naomi working properly, give it a go on an emulator, because especially if you've got a USB arcade stick or something, you'll have a very authentic experience. And it's definitely worth giving some of these lesser appreciated Dreamcast family games a go.
Yeah, that's right. There's a lot of exclusives for Naomi that are worth investigating.
Mm-hmm.
And for most of you out there, emulation is probably the way to go. I briefly have one more little topic to cover, if you're quite happy to stay for another 10 minutes.
Yeah.
We'll blow this out to a 2-hour bumper episode or something.
Right, okay. I think by this point, we're probably just talking to ourselves now anyway. No one's still listening.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Oh, well.
So when we mentioned at the beginning about the relationship between the Neo Geo AES and the MVS, and then the next relationship was Dreamcast and Naomi.
Right.
And then since then, nothing has really happened in that sort of space.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mainly from arcades not being as popular as they used to be in the majority of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's stayed a lot more popular in Japan, I get rumblings that it's starting to fade a little bit in Japan as well. Or
yeah, it's going the same way. Like if you go into arcades now in Japan, there are a lot of like old school arcades you can find like out of the way. They're usually not in like the malls and cinemas and the big mainstream places, but there are these like hardcore arcades. They're usually a bit dirty, a bit grimy, a little dodgy looking, but they're fantastic. I mean, they're absolutely great. But in the mainstream arcades, like the stuff you'll find in Aeon Mall and stuff, usually they're huge and they're popular, but it's usually just like the gimmicky style games like racing, shooting, rhythm games, especially rhythm games. By far the biggest presence you'll see in Japanese arcades outside of like pachinko and slot and stuff like that. The rhythm games are hugely popular.
Yeah. And I think it seems like in the article I wrote about Naomi, there seemed to be a reluctance for arcade developers to move to the next system. They sort of stayed with the Naomi for a long time. And I feel like that reluctance is still sort of there as well. It's like they've got high quality HD visuals now, and they've got systems that are working and they're still collecting money, and there's less incentive to move on to the next thing. And when you look at arcade shows and stuff, there doesn't really seem to be a new sort of Neo Geo type standard or Naomi type standard that developers would go to as the next sort of system with interchangeable games. It doesn't seem to really exist anymore.
Well, the Taito X and Taito X 2, that had like support from quite a lot of different developers. I mean, it's what Street Fighter 4 was released on. But I mean, you're right. Compared to the MVS or Naomi, no, it's nothing.
Yeah, particularly in the most recent last few years, that doesn't seem to be much exciting happening. And it felt like there was a moment there with Sega and the... Because like as a Sega arcade hardware collector, I'm sort of looking for the next big thing now. Even Lindbergh itself didn't really have that many exclusives that warrant a purchase of a Lindbergh.
No, that's why I haven't picked one up yet, but for that reason.
Yeah, and then moving beyond that to the Ring Edge and the Ring Wide and the Ring Edge 2... There seemed to be a moment there with the Ring Edge 2 where they were trying to try and establish a new standard for people to work on and have interchangeable games. And they brought back, like Gurev did Under Defeat HD and French Bread did another Under Night in Birth.
Yeah.
Triangle Service did the Arcade Love and the Pengu games. And there was all of these sort of ex-Naomi developers sort of coming together to support the Ring Edge 2 for a short period there. Mm. And it seemed like this is going to be the new Naomi. It's going to move forward from now, and everyone's going to develop for this Ring Edge 2 system. there seemed to be this explosion and it was moving in a direction that looked really promising. Hmm. And then Sega released the new NU about 6 months later, and they didn't really stick with it long enough, particularly from an arcade enthusiast perspective. It's like, all right, I've got to go for that, and there's going to be about a dozen unique games for it, and that'll be worthwhile purchasing. But that it didn't really seem to pan out. But there was this period there where it looked promising, and there was like a bit like a Google Play Store for Android or the Steam Store, where you could access these games to the systems via online and they'd be downloaded to the hardware. Mm. And all of this talk about the Dreamcast 2 and people talking about, oh, it's going to be this system where you can play old Dreamcast games and download new games via some store. And I remember when the rest of the Dreamcast Junkyard team were talking about it, it's like the effort of putting that together would be too much for Sega as it is now, but they kind of did in the arcade space. And when you look at the Ring Edge 2 or the Ring Edge, it's a PC box with an integrated power supply. And as you look at the progression from Naomi to Lindbergh to Ring Edge, they become more and more all-in-one products. And that the Ring Edge, it could have, and there were rumors, unfounded, stupid rumors at the time, but there was the potential for Sega to say, you know, okay, arcade operators, here's our new system, and home enthusiasts who love Sega and love Sega hardware, you can purchase this all-in-one PC box that has all of the components inside, and we will create a JVS-compatible controller for it. And they could have sold the same hardware. So rather than having the MVS, AES, which were slightly different versions of the same thing, and the Dreamcast and the Naomi, slightly different versions of the same thing, they could have marketed this hardware to both arcade and home users, and they both could have accessed the same online servers for multiplayer play and downloading of games. And it would have potentially opened up the market to
it sounds great, but then you can do all that through Steam on your PC.
Yeah.
Like, you could just make, the devs can just release the game on Steam and...
Yeah, for it to be successful, it would have had to have been married with some kind of exclusivity. Like, here's, this Sega game is coming out on the Ring Edge, and it'll be on the Ring Edge exclusively for 12 to 18 months or something before we port it to PC. And if you're a hardcore enthusiast and you want to spend, you know, you can't sell the same thing to the home consumer for $200 that you're trying to get an arcade operator to buy for thousands of dollars. It's impossible. So it would have only been for the hardcore elite. Probably would have only been purchased direct from Sega online or something. But I felt like there was the potential there, particularly with arcades closing down and stuff, for this sort of arcade network and selling the same product to both the home and the arcade, there was the potential there to claim that throne that began with the Neo Geo and was succeeded by the Naomi Dreamcast, to try and reclaim that space that's sort of independent of the console wars. Mm. And it would be out of reach for most people. It would have been really expensive and it probably wouldn't have been successful. But there seemed like there was work towards that, particularly when they incorporated most of the components into an all-in-one box. For this system, it may have been considered, but it didn't happen. But it feels like it was heading in that direction.
Well, the reason there hasn't, in my opinion, one reason that there hasn't been another like system as popular as the MVS or Naomi is partially because nowadays in arcades they're buying these gimmicky systems, and so when they want to replace it, they have to get rid of the whole system. They can't change the game on it. You know, if you look at like Transformers, Human Alliance, whatever, you can't take that out and put in another game in it. You have to send it back to Sega. Maybe Sega will like use the parts of change it to something else. But as an arcade operator, you have to buy the whole thing. So it makes there's no reason to have like an equivalent MVS or Naomi, because what's popular in the arcades now is these big gimmicky cabinets with specialist control panels and things.
That's right, yeah. Very few use the button stick combination anymore.
Yeah. And secondly, it's all the same for consoles, the same for arcades. It's all basically PC hardware now anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
And I imagine it's not as expensive to... Like, developing something like the Lindbergh was just a matter of slotting in pre-built parts from other manufacturers, buying them in bulk and putting them in a steel case, and that's it. It wouldn't have cost them anywhere near as much as millions of, or whatever, or however much it is to develop a Dreamcast.
Yeah, the bespoke development, yeah.
Yeah, so if they want to add to that and change the components, it's quite easy, and there's not so much incentive for them to stick with the same hardware for too long, I'd imagine.
Yeah, there is... because the hardware is fixed to a particular graphic card and a particular CPU, and the footprint of the operating system is very small, it did allow, even though when you look at the specs, they look quite modest compared to like what's possible in your own home-built PC. Because of all those factors, developers could eke out a little bit more oomph out of that static, non-upgradable system that I think does... there is a little bit of a complication in converting it from that to like something like Steam, where it needs to be compatible with multiple processors and multiple GPUs and things that do reduce the efficiency of the program that you're running. But it's a minor factor. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It's the fanboy in me that wants.
Well, yeah, no one would love more than me and you as well, probably, for a new Sega console or a home version of the arcade. They did something similar with the CPS2. CPS2 was only ever really properly supported in the arcade, but they did release a home version for collectors. It's now extremely rare.
Yeah.
I'm sure at the time it was very expensive, but it's now extremely rare, extremely expensive. But they did that. I mean, something like that has happened before. Could it happen again? Yeah, it's not impossible. It's not like Dreamcast 2 out of the realms of possibility. Crazy, but will it happen, Matt? Probably not, but yeah, I'd love it if it did.
Yeah, because when people were describing the Dreamcast 2 and all the things they were talking about, it's like...
No, it was stupid. It was ridiculous.
Well, a lot of them sort of gelled with this idea I had of the Ring Edge 2 being marketed as to the home as well as arcade operators, but the big difference was it wouldn't have been affordable. It would have been, you know, the elite sort of... when you think of the car market and you've got your Vauxhalls and your Fords and that's the console wars. And then you've got your high-end arcade Ferraris and, you know, the unattainable systems that are super expensive, which is the space filled by the Neo Geo. And to a certain extent, the Naomi for a time, that throne has been left vacant for a long time. And there was the potential to market to that space for a very expensive entry fee.
But I mean, if they did release something like that, you wouldn't be getting like the brand new Sega arcade games like Transformers Human Alliance, the Hummer game.
Well, the development of games would have been geared slightly more towards for that system being sold in the home. But you're right, most of the output is geared towards a particular bespoke setup, with a particular control setup that is not cross-compatible to like the next game that's developed. It's just discard your old cabinet and buy a new cabinet for the next game.
Personally, like people want Dreamcast 2. You would have liked Ring Edge 2.
Ring Edge
2 home version. For me personally, I'd be more than happy if Sega just started porting all of their arcade games onto systems that are already out there, like the PS4,
definitely.
The Xbox One, Steam on PC. I'd be satisfied. If they just did that and they released some at like budget price, they could add a few extras like the Crazy Taxi Pyramid, like we did with Crazy Taxi, or they couldn't. They could just leave it as just pure arcade experience with online leaderboards, a few servers to play online. If they did that, I would be over the moon. I'd be more than happy. That would be enough for me. And that's something that I think is realistically possible if somehow Sega got like support or... I don't know, if they gave it a go and marketed it well or something, then even if it's just a collection disc or I don't know, something, if it's not, even that, I don't think it's going to happen, which is sad, but it's not completely out of the realms of possibility.
Yeah, and I'm definitely not against that, and that's definitely like the most practical solution. But it's again back to what we were talking about earlier in the podcast about the death of consoles and everyone's moving to PC. It's like, well, that's basically the situation we find ourselves in. And there was an article at the beginning of the year about a conference from all of those popular shoot 'em up developers, the Caves and the G-Revs and the Triangle Service and things, saying, you know, arcades are dead. Everyone develop for PC and Android and iOS. Like, that's the future of the games.
Well, yeah, and Cave especially have been popular with iOS and Steam. They've done very well and sold well recently, so...
Yeah, most of them have given up on developing in the arcades now. Like, they're not primarily gearing their next release to the arcade. It's Steam, PC, or Android, iOS. This is the future, the world we live in today.
Yeah. Scott, we've got to wrap this up. 2 hours, 7 minutes. We've gone on too long.
I'm done now. I'm done.
We're going to be, I don't know, we're on a downer now. We're going to get the whiskey out and crying and stuff soon. So
it's been fun, though. It's been great.
Let's stop while we're still ahead at 2 hours, 7 minutes. Call it a day. We'll be right back. thanks for listening, everyone. Scott, would you like to do the honors of the Twitter stuff? Because I don't know the addresses and things. So how can people contact us on Twitter?
I've got no idea. I'm doc_eggfan, I think. Yeah, that's me. Yeah, I looked it up. At doc_eggfan.
This is an amateur tool.
Well, we can edit this out later.
Yeah, just edit this out later. Let's have a look. Dreamcast, Junkyard, Twitter.
The DC Junkyard.
Yeah, it's the DC Junkyard. Yeah.
And the main blog site is www.dreamcastjunkyard.co.uk.
.co.uk.
And the Facebook page is facebook.com/thedreamcastjunkyard, I suppose. That sounds right.
Yeah, that does sound about right. If not, just whack it into Google. Google will do our job for us.
That's right. Tom does this bit.
Yeah, he does. He does it well.
we need Tom. Yeah.
So, yeah, Tom. Tom. Oh, here we go.
Oh,
let's get a Tom impression. Okay, guys. Thank you for listening. No, I can't do it. I can't do it. Okay. Finally, if you're interested in this topic of Venaomi, definitely check out Emulating the System and come to the Dreamcast Junkyard blog and have a look at some of the expanding the Dreamcast collection articles that have been written there. They'll give you a little bit more information, and there's a few game lists showing you the ports and various releases that you can consider picking up. Finally, if this is received well, we'll certainly consider doing a future podcast on the other hardware in the Dreamcast family, the Naomi 2, the Thomas Wave, the System SP, and the Aura. So, yeah, I think that's it.
Sounds good to me.
Okay. Thank you for listening, guys.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
This is a game disc for Naomi CD-ROM system. You cannot play this with the Dreamcast.
Jesus Christ. I need a cigarette.
Please stop this disc now.